What do you get when you have one voiceover girl?
Oh, and me. That makes two voiceover girls.
Okay, when you have two voiceover girls, separated by one pond and two perspectives.
I know. You get the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast.
That's right. Let's listen as Rami and Jessica share their journey into the voiceover industry.
Hi, it's Rami Santosh, and welcome to our episode this week.
Hi, it's Jessica Matheson, and welcome to the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast. Today, you'll be hearing from more than just Rami Santosh and me. We'll be speaking with Jason, Dee, Terrell, and Venus. This time, we'll be getting their thoughts on what does it take to become a voiceover, and how do you know that you are one? First up, Jason. If you were to give advice to somebody who's new to the industry, what would you say it's going to take for them to become a voiceover?
Lots of studying, looking into all the parts that you may not know about. As we were saying, it's more than just the voiceover part. I mean, the voiceover is just a sliver of what voiceover really is. I'm still kind of in my early phases, but most of the time I'm not doing a lot of voiceover stuff. I'm doing a lot of marketing and stuff like that. So I think taking classes and learning about all the things that it really takes to get a business up and running, and taking classes and learning about the pieces that you don't know, and take all those weaknesses that you have and try to make them stronger and stronger and stronger. You know, for me, marketing was a big weakness for me because I was very uneasy about it. I didn't like it. And trying to find whatever I could to make it enjoyable, make it something that was no longer a deterrent for getting better. So I think taking the time to focus on that stuff, and, you know, if it's something you really, really don't like, then maybe assess, do the research and find out what it would take to get someone else to do or to get help with those things that you don't like to do. And is it financially feasible to do that? Another kind of part of it that I think is really important, at least it was for me, is to invest in yourself. I think that will, especially when you're starting off, I think that helps get your business up and running a bit more, a bit quicker. I don't think, like, if you get into it and you're like, well, I just don't have the money to do it, you just have to understand it's going to take more time to get there. And if you're okay with that, then that's fine. It just may take you more and more, many more years to get things up and running than if you decide, you know, find a way to find some funding to kind of give you foundation and know that most of that money you're not going to see again. And if you're okay with that, then I think it's okay. But if you're really uneasy about investing into yourself and doing all that, then I would probably say go a little bit slower. But that also goes into that point of making sure that a professional gives you kind of an assessment of, are you wasting your time? I met with JMC early in my career, and I'm like, I really don't know if I am the right fit for this. You know, can you listen to me and find out, am I wasting my time? You know, and if they were like, yeah, you know, this may not be the best thing for you, then at least I know early. And that's probably kind of a good thing too, to get that assessment, not too early, but early enough where you're kind of starting to think about maybe you want to move forward with it.
Yeah, it's definitely a better thing to know. You know, either way, even if the answer is, you know, I don't think you have a bookable voice. I just don't. And I don't know that you can gain those skills. So that's way better than, you know, you see some people that have spent years and thousands upon thousands of dollars for coaching that, you know, still have one note, and nobody has been kind enough to say, hey, or maybe not kind enough. But yeah, really, it is a kindness to let somebody know that they're on the wrong track.
Yeah, you may have the wrong coach too. That's like, well, you know, if you still want to learn, I'll stay with you, you know.
Yeah.
And like, you know, that's where those things where multiple coaches is good, because if you're hearing more and more people say, you may need to work on this more, or, you know, and you're just not open to the idea, or you're just not improving. Because that happens too. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably a good sign that you need to do something different, or maybe someone else just needs to get it out of you that another coach isn't. And, you know, but eventually there is that point where you got to figure out, you know what, maybe I'm just not right for this.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I just, you know,
No, people aren't good at absolutely everything. That's where people have their strengths and weaknesses and complement each other and stuff like that. It's not necessarily bad to be like, you know what, this isn't for you. It's better to learn that sooner than later, because you throw a lot of money at this business otherwise.
Absolutely. Yes.
So Jason, how do you know when you've become a voiceover artist? Is there a point at which you feel, this is it, I now am a voiceover artist?
That's very gray. It's a very gray area. I think it depends on how serious you are about it. If you just want to be heard on something, you know, like you want to tell your friends, oh, I was on a YouTube video with a thing, then I guess technically you are a voiceover. You know, your voice was used for something. If you're going more into the professional idea, I think getting paid for a voiceover job would probably be a good sign. But I think if you go in the really farther idea of what voiceover is, if you're able to book frequently, if you're auditioning, and I think this is kind of depends on the person too. I don't know. It depends on how, if you wanted to make it your living, I think you have to be able to book in a rate that would allow you to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that means auditioning X amount of times or landing a job that has this much money, or I, you know, that's that gray area. It's like, you know, if you're landing a, you know, maybe a job a month, you're not probably ready to make that move. I guess it's really subjective too, I guess, more kind of the way that the whole voiceover industry kind of is. It's what does it mean to you? I think it's more important how you feel about what you do than what other people do. Not like if other people don't say you're a voiceover, but you feel like you're a voiceover. I mean, who am I to say you're not a voiceover, or anybody mm-hmm. else for that matter? If you've never done a recording for anything, then you're probably not a voiceover.
you're an aspiring voiceover.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thanks, Jason. Awesome stuff. I really liked how you spoke about needing to get an assessment from somebody who knows their stuff in the industry, and maybe not even getting just one assessment, getting another assessment from another person. And if those assessments seem to match, perhaps you should take them seriously and think about where your career's headed. Is it headed for voiceover, or is it headed somewhere else? Next up, we have Dee. Okay, so to sum it all up, what does it take for somebody to become a voiceover?
The moral to that story is don't give up. I mean, there were several opportunities I had because I didn't take no for an answer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's so good, Dee. And I totally agree with you. It is about perseverance. You've got to keep going no matter how much rejection you feel or no matter how long it takes. If you want to do this, you need to persevere.
Yeah. So perseverance, make sure you've got focus on your business, and make sure you're determined to do what it takes to be successful. So if that's a question that you had for, you know, what would it take for upcoming VOs? If this was what you want to do, make sure you recognize you have to focus mm-hmm. on your business. You have to be determined. Jessica already said you have to have a thick skin.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You got to have a really thick skin. And just know that if you think you're good, don't let anybody tell you you're not. You know,
right. Yeah.
And Rami taught me that. She's like, I can't always listen to somebody else's, you know, voice in my head, because I've got what I think is right, and I'm good with that. And Rami, I actually took that to heart, because there were so many times that I was trying to be something that the mentors were saying, oh, do that, oh, do that. And I'm like, you know, maybe that's what's selling, maybe that's whatever, but that's not authentic me. And if I'm going to get hired, it has to be authentic me. Or, yeah. You know, or maybe I should just go and, you know, make beds at the local hotel instead.
Yeah, it is so important to be able to take advice that you receive from people. Most of them are well-meaning, and sometimes they just don't really have accurate information, and you have to filter through it. I had a person that I auditioned for one time, and he listened to not only my audition, my custom audition, but he also went on to a profile, because it was on a pay-to-play site, and he listened to all of my other reels that I have on that profile. And he came back to me and he said, you know, your commercial reel sounds great, but your other ones, the quality's just not there.
And I said, yeah, you know, I understand. I was able to afford to get one demo made and I went for the commercial demo. But the other demos are self-made demos and they're okay. But they're definitely not the quality that you would get from a demo producer. And I'll be replacing them as I'm able to. And the guy says, well, you shouldn't do that. In this business, you have to be able to do all of this stuff yourself or you're not going to make it. And I was just like, no, that's not correct. Industry standard is demo produced by a demo producer. And if you're going to make a self-made demo, you better be just as good as a demo producer. So I did take that advice and I just had to kind of push it aside because it wasn't accurate. It didn't work.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I agree. And Rami taught me that. I was really trying to be what everybody wanted me to be. And then I finally had to just say, I mean, it's like that happy sound in my voice. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, somebody's going to want that happy sound in my voice.
Yeah, that books all the time. You know, you have to find that audition that it ends up fitting with. And that's,
And I think one of the questions Rami asked it earlier, how did I know that I had kind of arrived at being a VO? And it was the first time when I opened up Amazon and my book cover popped up with my name on it. And then I was like, that's kind of legit, you know? Like, I like that.
So that's me.
So what I did was in the contracts for every ACX thing that I do now, that is one of my prerequisites, is that on the audiobook cover, my name has to appear.
That's cool. I have one author that does that with me, and I just think it's so cool, like, to see, like, my name's on that cover.
Yeah, that's how I knew I arrived.
Thanks, Dee. I really liked how you spoke about taking advice from people and considering where that advice is coming from and how those people relate to the industry or whatever it may be. Sometimes people's advice, although they mean well, may not really make sense. It may not fit. It may just be outright wrong. And you have to filter all of that and take that into consideration when taking someone's advice. Sometimes the advice you're given isn't good advice and you shouldn't take it. And sometimes it's great advice and you shouldn't ignore it. Now we're going to hear from Terrell. Take it away, Rami.
Thank you. So Terrell, are there any other key elements that are important to become a voiceover artist?
I'm not as involved as I should be yet in this, but the self-marketing is a big deal. You know, you do have to go out and do that. And I'm not particularly fond of that part,
but, me either.
But it is necessary. So that's a big thing that you have to, and dang, you have to not get your feelings hurt easily. You have to have a tough shell, not in that you become hardened, but you need to let things slide up. You need to slick yourself up with oil and let it all just ooze off of you.
Right.
That's another thing. You have to be able to handle rejection, because you're going to have way more rejection than you are acceptance. Way, way mm-hmm. more. And if that's a problem for you, or if your feelings get hurt too much, or you get too irritated by it all, don't even start getting into this. it'll be a rude awakening, and your feelings will get hurt, or you're going to get upset. That is one thing that I somehow, if I could have fit that into PIP somehow, I would have, but I guess patience, you have to, with patience and being able to deal with rejection, those kind of work together, you know?
Yeah. So. And so in your opinion, how do you know that you are officially official? How do you know that you're a voiceover? How would maybe somebody else know that they were a voiceover?
Well, you know, like, for instance, Bidalgo, you have to have your demos and you get vetted to be on the site. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, once you get a certain level of acceptance by certain people or certain groups, that helps solidify your idea that you might be a voiceover. And so getting accepted in like Bidalgo, where they vet you, that's one way. When you start getting some jobs, that's one big way that tells you that.
But do they always have to be paid jobs, or could you do work for free, but of charity work or work based on goodwill?
If you're okay with it, you know, there you get back into that integrity thing. You don't want to be just giving away everything for free. But if it's for a cause you believe in or something, frankly, I think you have more of an acceptance badge if you've been paid for it. But it's still good to do something if you believe in it, to do it pro bono as well. And once you start making your demos as well, that also adds to that badge of official VO person here. When you're doing all that, when you're doing your reels or your demos, definitely get coaching. Unless you really have the skills, have it professionally done. Don't do it yourself, especially for the big ones, in which I would say are commercial and your corporate narration for sure. And those usually are the ones that you start out with. And there's some debate, you know, everybody, the general old rule was you always get a commercial demo first. But then there are some people that, you know, they want a different demo because if that's where they know they're just going to jump into immediately. But if you want an agent, that's where you have to start, is have a commercial demo. You know, it depends where you're at. You know, they always say, do you need an agent? There again, if you want commercials, yeah. If you want animation, yeah, you need an agent. And from what I can see, being in LA or New York or such, particularly for animation, is better, even with the pandemic Zoom thing going on now everywhere. I know several voiceover people here in Denver that have been doing it for many years, and they say they only get like 10 to 15% of their work through an agent. So that's where so you don't necessarily, I feel, have to have agents, but it always can be helpful. And if you want some of the big stuff, the bigger stuff, that's usually what it comes through, bigger commercials. More higher end stuff comes that way. And they won't even look at you until you have your professional demos. You can't have crappy demos. Your home studio has to sound good. They're going to ask you for samples of your home studio, and you can't fake that. So you have to be prepared. Maybe that's another P I could put in there. Preparation. Yeah. You've got to prepare. You don't just suddenly, I'm on some of the Facebook sites and I'm thinking of getting into voiceover. And I've been told I have a nice voice and I've got my little Yeti, blue Yeti mic and my phone. What do I do now? And I'm like, oh my goodness.
That's if they give you that much information. Some of them are like, I want to get into voiceover. What do I do? And you're just like,
I know.
Oh boy, you got a long way to go.
Yeah. They kind of don't have a clue. I think that's, yeah. And they'll figure it out, but you never know. I always see that. And then you see, they're one of the lucky ones that they do one little audition and it's a $10,000 job and they get it. And like, what?
What about the being prepared? What about the having the good stuff? Like what?
I know. But you just never know. That's it. If you're a gambler, this is a good business for you because hey, it's a big gamble, really. You know, mm-hmm. You're just constantly rolling the dice, but you know, you're only getting a 2 and a 1, you know, that's it.
You're not kidding, Taro. There is a lot of risk involved in voiceover. Thanks for your insight. I really liked how you spoke about having a thick skin. You absolutely have to be prepared to be rejected more than you're given the job. And if you can't handle that, you are definitely not in the right place. One other really interesting point that you made was the idea that you can't necessarily fake it until you make it in voiceover. With good technique, you might be able to fool somebody into thinking you have a very expensive setup, but without a properly sound-treated space, there's no way the most expensive mic, or the cheap mic, or you are gonna sound good. And that's just one example of something you can't fake. Let's move on now to our conversation with Venus. So Venus, what do you think folks need to become a voiceover?
In terms of coaching, I think, you know, that's the first thing is coaching. You know, unfortunately, the first coach that I went with was just awful. I mean, she was an actress, a working actress, but she wasn't really a working VO. And, you know, it just ended up in a disaster. So I think, you know, do your homework, you know, ask around and find a really good coach. I mean, right now I'm coaching, am I allowed to name names?
Sure.
Oh, okay. So I'm coaching with Scott Burns, and he actually came recommended to me by Joshua Alexander, who I'm sure you know. You know, Josh and I struck up a nice kind of friendship, and he recommended him to me. And Scott is just, he's unbelievable. I mean, he'll do anything for you. He's a vet, you know, he's a working VO, he coaches, he's a demo producer too. So I would say, you know, education and practice, you know, your microphone alone can't give you that.
And what about knowing you've made it? How do you know?
So yeah, I have no more imposter syndrome. I feel confident in who I am, my capabilities. And you just know it. You just know it.
Great stuff again, Venus. Thanks. I really liked how you talked about coaching and how coaching is really important and probably a good first step when trying to break into voiceover. I also thought it was really interesting how you said you just kind of know when you've made it, when you're a true voiceover. That's different for everyone. And there's not really a good benchmark that you can really pinpoint, yes, I have made it as a voiceover. So if you know it, you just know it, and that's okay. Well, that's it for this episode.
Yep, it was really great talking to everyone and getting their perspectives on our questions. Great, so over to you, Jessica, to finish. Thank you.
Don't forget to like and subscribe to our podcasts wherever you prefer to listen to them. Also, if you're interested in connecting with us, you can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/voiceovergirlsacrossthepond.
Thanks for joining us for the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast. This is where we would normally shout out to our sponsors.
Rami, we don't have any sponsors yet.
I know, but if we did, this would be the shout out. Hint, hint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast.
And tell all your friends, your family, your neighbors, and everyone else.